so serious.
All the toys, all the time.
I am the game, and still getting trying to play you.
You know the rules. This isn't a toy.
But we bought it at the toy store.
We did, but the way I'm using it makes it an adult thing.
Are you ready to play the game?
Yeah! Welcome to the toy department with Matt Kolsky and Derek Madden.
Hey, it's been a minute, but we are back for another toy department. I'm Derek Madden, and he's Matt Kolsky. How are you, sir?
Reunited, and it feels so good.
Peaches and Herb, man. They don't get enough credit.
Yeah. Are we supposed to give Herb a strong H, not Peaches and Herb?
Yeah, it's Herb. Like, it's not Herb Williams. You know what I mean? Herb.
Okay.
I feel like you really wanted to argue with that, and then you just realized, no, that's correct. No one's named Herb.
Well, no, I mean, I was going to present a case, and then I realized that you're probably, I should defer to your greater Peaches and Herb knowledge.
Okay. Yeah, pretty sure it's Peaches and Herb. All right, we've got a ton to talk about on this show, so it probably means we're going to hopefully just sort of skip through a bunch of topics today.
Yeah, that should work out.
Yeah, you're right. We have no chance of making that happen, but we're going to try. And I wanted to start with, it's now old news, but this is a thing that struck a chord with both of us on Twitter for opposite reasons. And that is the retirement of Kevin Garnett.
The great Kevin Garnett.
The great Kevin Garnett. Kevin Garnett was great. He is one of the world's great assholes. And here's a point where we can salute the asshole that was KG. Seriously, this is one of those things.
You're so misguided in this.
This is one of those things I think is funny because Kevin Garnett is one of your favorite players of all time, right? If we're going to be accurate, Kevin Garnett is literally my least favorite player of all time. And I know that's weird for me to say, sitting in Minneapolis, Minnesota, but God, dude, did I hate that guy's game. Just,
oh yeah, wait. Are you prepared to like sacrifice your entire fan base?
I literally
on radio in Minnesota.
I could not care less. If Minnesota, come at me, Minnesota, because I am on the side of righteousness on this one. And well, my case,
you're certainly being self-righteous about his attitude. I'll give you that.
My case for this is it's really simple. He's a dirty player. This is a guy who consistently would win these polls for dirtiest player in the NBA. He's a maniacal person.
Iverson used to win those polls. Those polls are bunk.
Really? The polls from the players. Like,
yeah.
We all know, everyone knows this guy took cheap shots on defense. And here's the thing, is it's like if you rooted for him or you're on his, you know, he's on your team, then it's one of those things where it's like, oh, it's cute and he really wants to win. But like, if you're not, then you see it for what it is. It's dirty.
It's not cute, first of all. It's playing hard. And
no, it's not. It's playing outside the bounds of the rules. Matthew Dellavedova doesn't play hard. He plays dirty.
I would argue he does both of those things. The dirty stuff that bothers me about Dellavedova is not yanking someone's jersey or shorts or throwing a covert elbow. It's diving into the knees of a player where you can tear his ACL and ruin his career.
Don't think KG was above that. I want to read you.
He was absolutely above that. And it's ridiculous to stand on this corner of, oh, he was dirty, so I refuse to respect him. When you're talking about a guy who, even if there were a handful of dirty plays in his 20-year career, was one of the class acts, one of the best.
Oh, wait. Hold on a second.
As a human being.
Did you class act? Mr. Honey Nut Cheerios? Class act?
You can talk trash and still be a class act as a human being.
No, your wife tastes like Honey Nut Cheerios. There's no sentiment. There's nothing about that that says class. You can think it's funny, which I don't, but you can.
Oh, come on.
But it's not classy. Come on. That's just objectively not classy.
Okay. Do you think Michael Jordan was completely
classy? No, I think Michael Jordan was an asshole, and I rooted against him every step of the way. That Michael Jordan is almost my exact point is like, Bird, it's like these people are homicidal. Like they are homicidal people who should not be celebrated. No, I don't. I do sort of think Larry Bird was classless, actually. Yes, yes, I do.
You just think anyone with a competitive edge is classless.
No, no, I do not. Magic Johnson had a competitive edge. I don't think he was classless. Lots of players have competitive. Steph Curry has a competitive edge. LeBron has a competitive edge.
I guarantee you LeBron has said some foul stuff to get to the other dudes on the court.
Okay.
I guarantee you that Magic Johnson said things just as insane as your wife tastes like Honey Nut Cheerios.
None of these people are famous for doing these things. When you talk about Kevin Garnett and his career, the first thing people say is how freaking crazy he is.
Steve Smith Sr., classless?
Steve Smith Sr., the football player, the wide receiver.
Correct.
I wouldn't say classless, but I also wouldn't say classy. That's not the first thing. That's not the first thing that comes to mind when you say Steve Smith.
Yet here's a guy classy. Who off the field is committed to military charities and works with disadvantaged kids.
Sure.
So, like, just because someone is on the field or court saying foul things in the heat of competition does not make them a classless individual. And Kevin Garnett has never been in any trouble, has never run afoul of good taste or the law off the court.
I'm not accusing him of being a criminal. I'm accusing him of being an asshole.
Well, but I'm trying to outline the difference between someone who is a competitive asshole, like the Michael Jordans and Kevin Garnetts of the world, and someone who is just an asshole.
Why does there have to be a difference? They're both assholes.
No, yeah, but I'm an
By the way, Michael Jordan, by all accounts, kind of in all sorts of facets of life. No,
that may be true. Michael Jordan's a bad example.
All right,
but again, Larry Bird. You know, pick your all time great. Very few of them were making friends on the court.
Oh, really? Larry Bird doesn't have any friends on the court?
On opposing teams? Larry Bird is famous for being the most vicious trash talker in the history of the NBA.
You understand there's literally a documentary about how Larry Bird is friends with his greatest rival, right? There's a whole entire documentary about this, right? That's a thing on the record that you can watch.
And you realize that during their careers, that was not how that was interpreted at all.
Well, but they at some points during their careers, it's not how it was interpreted, but they certainly were friends as players while they were still playing.
Let me ask you this. So if Kevin Garnett and Carmelo Anthony are friends in 10 years, are you going to take back what you're saying about Kevin Garnett?
No, I'm not.
You know what? I would be willing to bet you literally every penny I have that those two guys will be at the very least friendly, if not friends, in 10 years.
Okay. I'll take you up on that. Every penny you have. Can I read you a passage? I want to read you a little bit from – this is from the
– Hey, just do not gloss over the fact that we just made a $5 bet.
Okay. I want to read you a little bit from the Chris Mannix piece on Garnett's retirement. But this piece, I will certainly grant you, is intended as a loving tribute. Like this is not like it's not a hit piece by any means.
Because Chris Mannix is not a psychopath.
Right.
Go on.
Okay. So Doc Rivers, who coached Garnett with the Celtics, was asked to compare Garnett's intensity to Chris Paul's. They were similar in intensity and preparation, Rivers said, but Kevin was insane. Teammates hid from Garnett before games because exhibiting anything short of laser-like focus was unacceptable. Headphones that blared a little too loud were likely to draw Garnett's ire. Rajon Rondo thrived under Garnett's wing while Kendrick Perkins adopted Garnett's surly personality. In 2006, Lindsey Hunter, then a veteran guard in Detroit, came off the floor after an early season game against Boston with a quizzical look. What's up with Perkins, Hunter asked. Last season he was this quiet guy. Now he's fuck this and fuck that. That was all KG. Rookies felt Garnett's wrath. Some used to wake up on the road in the middle of the night to phone calls from KG. I need soap. Go get me soap. So they would hop in a cab, find an open CBS, and get Garnett the soap that he asked for. Garnett is a jerk making other players jerks, terrorizing rookies. This is like rooting for Jack Nicholson in A Few Good Men. You're literally rooting for the guy who ordered the code red. Just, oh, God, I hate him so much.
It is.
I'm so glad he's gone from the league.
it's so over the top to react that way to rookie hazing that goes on every team.
He's the worst.
If you think, I mean, come on. You really think Kevin Garnett's the one guy in the league sending rookies out for soap at midnight?
I
give me a break. This is a ridiculous conversation.
Why is
the
this
stuff that you're talking about is common stuff?
If it's common stuff, why does this kind of thing make it in the story? Like, here's the thing: is if you were playing pickup basketball with
people,
let's just say
not pickup basketball.
Let's just say
of
random
course I
dude.
I don't want to play pickup basketball with Kevin Garnett.
No, exactly. No one wants to be around a person like this. But for whatever reason, in the NBA, we celebrate it. We celebrate this guy who is a maniac, and we're like, oh, look at the maniac go. It's terrible.
That's right.
Ugh.
Maniac doesn't necessarily mean bad. Maniac, in many cases, as used in these contexts, means intense, means committed, means determined to create a winning atmosphere. And there's no question that every team Kevin Garnett was on got a huge benefit.
Yeah, Kevin Garnett was a good player. I'm not disputing that.
There's also no question that other players, whether they loved it all the time or not, benefited from Kevin Garnett's attitude and on-court play, where he was incredibly unselfish. You're talking about a guy who had elite skills in almost every category of NBA basketball. Somebody who was committed to team and was committed to success. And if he did it with a hard edge, freaking out about that like he's a killer is just insane to me. It's more insane than anything Kevin Garnett ever did.
Really?
Yes.
I just
think it's much more reasonable to tell an opponent that his wife tastes like Honey Nut Cheerios than to scream about how insane it is to send a rookie out for soap at 3 a.m. I guarantee every team has sent a rookie out to do something dumb at 3 a.m. because they're a rookie.
You know, I'm glad that there's someone out there who's willing to take a courageous stand on behalf of all the bullies in this world. I'm glad that you're there for that. Would you like to give us a sermon about how Donald Trump is just a straight shooter next?
Wow. We can't talk about Kevin Garnett.
You're right. We can't talk about Kevin Garnett. But you know, it's funny. There's a movie called We Need to Talk About Kevin. And I feel like really we don't need to talk about Kevin anymore. I don't want to talk about Kevin anymore.
You just made me a Trump supporter.
you're acting like a Trump supporter.
No.
That's seriously.
Ridiculous.
This
is exactly the point. The Trump thing is exactly the point.
I am going to find your Twitter. I'm going to find your Twitter account and change your avatar to one of those frogs.
A bully on a basketball court in the mold of Kevin Durant who gets on his teammates and convinces them to do an extra lift, that's working towards a common goal in a nasty way. And look, are there better ways to do it? I don't know. There's certainly different ways to do it that are be lower impact on people. And if you want to say that Carmelo Anthony is a more lovable person because he doesn't push his teammates hard, then fine.
It's not about pushing your teammates hard or not pushing your teammates hard. There are like you said, there are people all around the NBA who push their teammates hard. Most of them can manage to do it without being a dick. Every great player in the NBA has incredible competitive drive. You could even say insane competitive drive. Some of them are, you know, don't always treat their teammates in the best way. No one, literally no one in the history of the game took it to the extent that KG does, which is why it's the first thing everybody says about him. And I don't think that's anything to be celebrated. I just don't.
Being hard on his teammates is not at all the first thing people say about him. It's you're the only person saying that first about Kevin Garnett.
That's not true. That's not true. First of all, everyone talks about how insanely competitive he was. That's what I'm talking about. Not that he's hard on his teammates, although that's part of that. Not that he was throwing elbows left and right when people weren't looking, which is also part of that. But that just that he was insane. That he was a guy that would cross the line. And look, if you want to celebrate the Bill Lane Beers of basketball history, good on you. But I don't.
Comparable. You cannot keep comparing Kevin Garnett to people who were blatantly, truly dirty in a way that's trying to injure other players. An elbow to the rib cage is not the same as a clothesline. It's just not.
I'm sorry,
you can't make Kevin Garnett into Bill Laimbeer. It's not the same.
I didn't make Kevin Garnett into Bill Laimbeer. Kevin Garnett did just that. Did. I mean, look, obviously, he's a more skilled player than Laimbeer, and that's what makes it all the more a shame. That's what I mean is, like, this guy had incredible talent. He's an incredibly gifted athlete. Like, the rest of it was so unnecessary. Ugh. I mean, look, obviously, at some point, whether you like a guy in a sports context or not, he's an aesthetic choice. And just everything about him aesthetically rubs me the wrong way. I don't need to watch people like that. And I'm happy that I don't have to watch this guy play anymore.
And I'm sad that you didn't get to enjoy arguably one of the top three players to play in your lifetime.
Top three? Come on.
Okay, top three players of his generation.
I mean, whatever. I'm not even going to get into it.
He's absolutely in the top three.
All right.
It's Duncan, Kobe, Garnett, and that's not – there's no argument.
Can we move on?
Not until you accept that.
I don't have to accept that, no.
Who's better than Garnett in this era?
I mean, is LeBron not in Garnett's era?
No, he's next.
He's next? Well, what are you defining the era as?
Guys around that same age. LeBron's about 10 years younger than Garnett.
All right, fine. Fine, he's top three.
All right, we can move on.
Okay, thank you. Bye, Kevin Garnett. We will miss you, some of us.
That's right, we will, and love you forever.
It boggles my mind. I can't wrap my head around how you could love a guy like that. I mean, respect.
As soon as you said that Trump thing, I feel you judging me as a person. That's fine,
though. I really am judging you as a person. I just don't, and look, you're not the only one. I have other good friends who are huge KG fans, and I just don't get it. He just seems impossible to root for.
If you don't have good taste in basketball players, at least you have good taste in friends.
I have great taste in basketball players. And look, that, obviously there's people from Minnesota listening to this. He's your hometown guy, whatever. I get that. But
a guy who, by the way, stayed committed to a hometown that repeatedly devalued and failed to support him. And a guy that, whatever.
That's another story for another day.
Ask the community around Minnesota if Kevin Garnett's an asshole.
Okay.
I'm
a little bit afraid to.
Yeah, because everyone's going to glow about what an awesome guy he is.
Uh-huh. Yeah. All right. Let me do my best to make it up to the good people of Minnesota.
Yeah, good luck.
Can we talk about the Minnesota Vikings for a second? Because I do find them to be sort of a fascinating team right now.
Well, they might be the best team in football, at least before this coming week.
Isn't it? It's sort of amazing that you can certainly at least make that argument. And yet,
I mean, I think they're probably top five without question.
Certainly without question.
And if
you're just talking about four-game resume in terms of who's done what, theirs is the most impressive, no?
Probably. And if you put them on the field, I would favor them against anybody but a fully healthy New England right now. So,
and what's remarkable about that to me is that they do not currently field a single skill player who would scare you, no?
Well, I think we're learning that Stephon Diggs should scare you.
He's talented.
You might not have thought so coming into this year, but I think what he's done so far makes him a scary wide receiver.
Yeah, he's a good wide receiver. Would you say he's a top 10 wide receiver? Top 5 wide? You definitely wouldn't say he's a top 5 wide receiver, right?
No, but I mean, I think he's getting to that top 10. He's 22 years old. You know, we don't have a lot for him. It's his second season. So, he's got 25 catches in four games, which isn't too insane, but he looks excellent.
I think he's going to be a very good player, and I think he's very talented. I'm not knocking Stephon Diggs at all, but I don't think...
I understand what you're saying.
I don't think you go to sleep at night as an assistant coach going, oh my God, we got to play Stephon Diggs tomorrow, and if we can't figure out a way to slow him down, we're screwed. You know what I mean? He's not Julio Jones. He's not Antonio Brown.
No, no, no. Not in a vacuum, you don't say that. But you do say that facing this Vikings team simply because if they score twice, you're basically done.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing is it's like
the scary thing is obviously the defense.
Is you watch them and they're just beating people with toughness and smarts and discipline. And I think in a league that is predicated on just throwing it all over the place, it's kind of great. It's kind of amazing, really, honestly.
I agree with that. And I would also say I think we probably have to give some credit and I don't know that anyone was wrong, but I think people were potentially being reminded that a healthy, well-protected Sam Bradford is a pretty good quarterback.
Yeah, well, most healthy, well-protected QBs are pretty good quarterbacks, and I think
a credit to them. A healthy, well-protected Sam Bradford can be excellent. How's that?
Yeah, I mean, feel like he's been excellent in those games, or he's been good? He's been very good, right?
He's been very good and efficient and smart. He's completing 70% of his passes and hasn't turned it over. And
yes.
That's impressive.
That is impressive. And impressive, I think, is a fair adjective. And it is one of those things, like, you look at Minnesota and you think, like, yeah, they're great, but what happens when they're down double digits? But they've been down double digits a couple times. So, you know, if you got enough time in the game, at least, I don't know that they're a team where if they're down 14 in the fourth, you'd think that they still have a chance. But I do think that they can overcome deficits in the playoffs should that be necessary. So,
yeah, they're not a team where you go, it's over when they're down. And again, this defense has the potential to be all-time good.
Yeah.
What they've done so far is very, very impressive.
So if not the Vikings, I'm suspecting, at least from your conversation at the beginning of this, that you don't think it's the Vikings. You think New England is the best team in the league right now?
I think if Tom Brady is what we think he's going to be, which is pissed off for greatness, then yeah, I think I probably favor the Patriots. But I'll tell you this. The Vikings, A, are one of the few defenses that I think can give even a Tom Brady Patriots offense real trouble. And B, Mike Zimmer is one of the coaches in the NFL that I think can compete with Belichick. So,
wow.
If you put those two teams in the Super Bowl right now, I favor the Patriots, but only slightly.
They do have a vibe that sort of resembles those Giants teams that were able to upset the Patriots.
Yeah, they have that, and I would say the defense has the potential to be better. I mean, it doesn't have that pop culture famous unit like the Giants defensive line was.
But they're more physical in the secondary, I think.
They're better. They're just better in the secondary. They're better top to bottom. They don't have four elite defensive linemen necessarily, and certainly they don't have four elite pass rushers, but they're strong top to bottom at every level. They play hard. They hit you hard. They're forcing turnovers. They are really, really good. I think better overall than those Giants defenses were. And I think Sam Bradford is a more efficient and intelligent and less mistake-prone quarterback than Eli Manning. Now, he may not reach the heights of a hot Eli, because hot Eli is really something, but he doesn't seem to be prone to the same regular collapses that Eli is either.
Yeah, what's amazing, and I dare I say Belichickian, about all of this is, right, Sam Bradford has had, what, 5 weeks in this offense?
Yep.
You know.
And Mike Zimmer is a guy who was very well respected for a long time before he got his chance to be a head coach, not unlike maybe a Bruce Arians or someone like that, who, you know, grows up as an assistant and is one of the most respected around the league for a long time before finally getting the opportunity. And I think he's taking great advantage of it. I think the move to hire North Turner as an offensive coordinator is just good business.
I was just about to say, you have to give Norv a lot of credit for this, because Zimmer's a defensive guy.
No, I know. But that's what I'm saying is the smartest coaches hire the right people underneath them as well. I mean, we hear all the time football coaches are like a CEO. And ironically, when you hire a football coach who was previously a coordinator or assistant of some kind, the one thing you don't know very much about is how well they'll manage as that CEO. And I think in addition to crafting one of the best, if not the best defenses in the league, Zimmer has also hired one of the best offensive coordinators we've ever seen to run the offense.
Yeah, so, staffs in general. I mean, you know, look, Tony Sperano might not have been the greatest head coach, but, you know, having him under Norv and running your lines, like that goes pretty well, I think.
Run the lines. Yeah, so. And it also, I think, speaks to the sort of person and coach Zimmer is that he's able to get sort of a who's who of top flight assistants.
Yep. So and some of Belichick's got some of that going on. You know, McDaniels is a great offensive coordinator.
A great offensive coordinator who seems more than willing to simply be the offensive coordinator for the Patriots.
Yep. Although I've heard some whispers that he'd like another head coaching job in the right spot.
Maybe, so. But he could have had that any time in the last 3 years.
Oh, I think he's been offered some jobs. I don't know that they've been
exactly
in the right spot.
That, well, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah,
I think he's been offered some jobs. And he said, no thanks. Yeah. I'm good here. And now that's probably smart for his own personal brand as well, because it certainly only gets better as the Patriots win with Jimmy Garoppolo and Jacoby Brissett. But that says something about the program, right?
It does.
If it wasn't a great program, anybody who got a head coaching opportunity would absolutely leave.
That is a fair point. I'm curious, as a person who's paid to talk about sports all day, do you find it sometimes hard to talk about the NFL just because it's so analyzed that it's – are there original points left when, you know, trying to dissect four games of an NFL season?
I think you have to get pretty specific. I think for local sports radio, yes. I think it would be a lot harder to do it from a national perspective and be original. I mean, locally you dig in, you know, there's things I can still say about the way Blaine Gabbert or Colin Kaepernick, the way Blaine Gabbert has played or Colin Kaepernick might play. There's things I can still say about whether the defense looks like it can hold up at all without Navarro Bowman. You can dig pretty deep in for local stuff.
Yeah, but man, you got to deep dive into that team.
Well, you know, you win some, you lose some. I also get to deep dive into the Warriors, so I won't complain.
Yes. Speaking of which, as we talk about programs and the Warriors, this Saturday, you and I had a little text exchange as Tennessee and Georgia were throwing up dueling Hail Marys in the final 20 seconds of a game in Athens, Georgia.
Do you mean the Titans and the Falcons?
No. I mean the Tennessee Volunteers and the Georgia Bulldogs. They are college football teams.
Oh, they're what?
So, I mean, have you at some point now at least seen these highlights on SportsCenter, I'm assuming, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Like,
I did watch the final 2 minutes of Clemson and Louisville as well.
Pretty exciting, no?
Sure. So, in the same way that a good high school football game is exciting.
Oh, my God. So, I'm texting Kolsky as this is happening, like, are you watching this? This is amazing. And you are watching what? What did you say you were doing?
I think at that point I was actually playing video games waiting for the Warriors preseason game to come on.
and so I dropped, of course, the Allen Iverson preseason. We're talking about preseason. And I said,
about to be the best preseason game ever. Hashtag Durant season.
I'm sorry. I just have to question your sports priorities when you're skipping. It's one thing to just skip out on it. You're skipping out to watch games that don't count. Come on, man. Come on, man. What are we even doing out here, man?
To watch 20 minutes of the first time Kevin Durant and Steph Curry ever played basketball together.
Yeah, it's not the first time they've ever played basketball together.
Okay, you know what I mean.
And it won't be the last, I might add. And it's certainly not the first time that it's going to – don't you want to watch the first time they play together when it counts? You want to watch opening night? Like, I can't –
By the way, I intend to.
Yeah, as you should. But, right. I mean, really? You're going to skip out on like...
You make this sound like I was like, huh, I've got these college football games that are coming down to the wire, and I've got this Warriors preseason game that starts in 20 minutes. I think I'd rather prepare for the preseason game than watch... No. It's more like this. Man, I got nothing to do before this Warriors preseason game. I think I'll throw on some video games.
Yeah, I just don't...
That's the whole thing. There's no ruling out of college football. There's no point at which I go, I think I should watch some... Nah, never mind.
It doesn't occur to you on a Saturday to just check in on the college football and see if there's anything interesting happening.
Again, to me, as someone who has very little, if any, interest in college football at large from a broader sense, there's just not much for me in watching random games in the middle of the year.
I guess I just
if I was desperate for football,
but there's no such thing as random games in the middle of the year in college football, because the middle of the year matters just as much as the end of the year. You know what I mean? That's the beauty of it.
And every college football game matters more, because that's asinine.
I'm not saying that every college football game matters more, but many things that happen during the course of the regular season have an impact that is disproportionate to the impact of a regular season NFL game. Things that happen in the NFL regular season matter too, obviously.
Why is it disproportionate? Explain to me why a college football game matters more than a pro game.
I mean, it's math, right? How many teams are there in the NFL? There's 32 teams. 30?
Right.
All right. And 12 of them make the playoffs?
Right.
Okay. In college football, there are, 120. Right. And 4 of them make the playoffs. So right. Getting into the playoff, which is the thing that ultimately matters, there's a...
How many teams right now would you say have a chance of getting into the playoff?
Right now have a chance of getting... Are you talking about a chance or a realistic chance?
Let's start with any chance whatsoever.
Any chance whatsoever? I would say there's now at least 30.
Oh, no way.
Yeah.
That is a lie. Okay, then how many do you think have a realistic chance?
A realistic chance?
Yeah,
I'm guessing off the top of my head right now, but I would say 12 probably.
Okay. So, here's what I would argue. 12 teams have a reasonable chance of making the postseason that matters. That means 100 and whatever minus 12, none of those games matter.
That's not true, because some of those you're gonna have 100 and some of those teams, like, okay, perfect example. The Tennessee Georgia game is a perfect example, because Georgia is a team that is no longer gonna have the ability to make the playoffs.
Right, great. So now
Tennessee is. So when Georgia plays Tennessee, that matters. If Georgia plays Alabama, that matters.
Right. No.
And then,
all the hundreds of games.
It's not just the playoff games that matter, because you have conference championships and things like that that also can determine and affect who gets into the playoffs. So if Georgia, if Georgia beats Tennessee, right, if that last Hail Mary isn't caught, that changes the entire picture of the SEC East, and that affects several teams. And the picture of the SEC East affects the picture of the FCC West, and that also affects the picture of the playoffs. So it's not just the direct, here are the teams, and they can make the playoffs. There's a domino effect. So there are games that matter to the playoff picture outside of that.
I'm not arguing that there are no games that matter to the playoff picture.
But what I'm saying is there are many games that matter, and it's more than just, hey, here are the 12 teams that have a chance to make the playoffs.
What percentage of any weekend's games would you say matter in terms of the actual result? 15, 20%?
That's probably about right. If you're talking about in terms of who's going to win a championship, yeah, I'd say 15, 20%.
In terms of even who's getting into the playoff.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
20%. That means 80% of college football games all year long are completely worthless.
Sure, but I'm not sitting here going like, oh my God, you chose to watch a Warriors preseason game over North Dakota State and Idaho. Like, fine, whatever.
I'm not talking about my specific decision.
We're talking about games that matter. There are games that matter every week.
Yes.
Okay, 90% of weeks. Occasionally there's a week where there's no games that matter. But
A, that's true. And B, even if there are games that matter every weekend, the point is the vast majority of the games don't matter at all.
But you're not. I'm not expecting you. I'm not doing either. Do what you want, I guess. I just don't understand.
I'm not making an argument for not watching the sport because less games matter. I'm making an argument for the sport is not what you think it is because less games matter. I'm making an argument that when everyone says these things about how, oh, it's so dramatic because every game matters more in college, it's a line. It's a bunch of horseshit.
I didn't say every game matters more. That's not what I said. So, okay. Like...
You acknowledge that this is a core staple argument of the college football set.
What I was saying is there are things that happen in the middle of the regular season that matter, that really affect the overall picture.
Yeah, I'm not debating that.
That's all I'm saying. Every week there are those games.
That's the case in every sport. That's not an argument for watching a lesser product.
But this week in particular, when there's three games with top 10 teams playing each other.
Yeah, but when it comes to me watching, man, none of this matters because I don't really care who wins. Who won last year? I honestly don't know.
All right. I just don't. Do I know who won last year?
Yeah.
Yes, the Harvard. Harvard won last year.
See, that doesn't sound realistic, but I feel like you said it because you couldn't immediately remember.
No, it's Ohio State. Sorry, I'm giving you a hard time. Sure, I was trying to think of the funniest answer I could think of.
Pretty good. Look, this is the thing. It's 100 and however many teams. It's 20% of the games have any effect on the outcome. And it's always one of five or seven schools that win. Now, I understand that part of that is that some of those things are not different from pro sports. I mean, you could say almost the same thing about basketball, the NBA. But the NBA is guys playing at the absolute highest level, and everyone on the court is incredible. Same thing for the NFL. The level of mistake proneness is extreme in college sports, particularly football. The level to which the game is dumbed down because it's simply too complicated for most colleges to get together in the time that they have to work on it, I find not as fun to watch. And when I'm about to spend, and this is really the biggest thing, when I'm about to spend 12 hours on Sunday watching football, I just am not at all compelled to spend any time on Saturday watching less entertaining, less talented football. And this is not to say, look, of course there can be exciting games. You know, back and forth, Hail Marys, it's great. It's fun. It only happens because there's a bunch of dudes on the field that aren't very good.
All right. I can't have this discussion with you anymore because we're just gonna depart at the notion of less entertaining. Less talented, I'll grant you. But I think it's less talented in a way that's not particularly relevant to the entertainment value of the product.
Well, but see, that means that you have to be entertained by wild.
It's not the mistakes that are entertaining.
Okay, then why is it more entertaining?
Well, I mean,
why is it not less entertaining than a sport where everyone's playing better?
One example is that there's all sorts of different strategies and play calling that eventually influences the NFL, as we've seen. Right, like the revolution of offense in this game started in college football, and then filtered down to high school and up to the NFL. So, you know, there's all sorts of things like that, styles of play, that are interesting and fascinating and fun to watch. And the players are plenty talented. So it's not like, you know, I mean, yeah, sometimes you get a game with terrible quarterbacks, you know what I mean? But there are also games with Lamar Jackson and you go, holy crap, you know? So
Lamar Jackson's awesome. And again, I'll watch a little Lamar Jackson here and there over the course of the season. I watched some Deshaun Watson last year. I still haven't seen Deshaun Kaiser, actually, but that probably has more to do with my hatred for Notre Dame.
The other great thing about it is there's so much good sports hate out there. Like, you can just hate these teams. It's great. I don't know how you can't get caught up in the passion of it. I just,
because I can't ride that.
It's everything that's good about sports.
Football game. I can't sit and just hate Notre Dame for 3.5 hours, and that's not enough for me.
I guess I'm fueled more by hatred than you are.
That certainly worked on Kevin Garnett.
By the way, does it undercut my argument that Alabama won the national championship last year and Ohio State won the year before?
Well, there you go.
Okay. Yeah, they blur together after a while. But I would do the same thing with Super Bowls.
That's the point. Same five teams that blur together win every year.
No, like I just said, I would do the same thing with Super Bowls, and I would do the same thing with World Series. Like, it's not really indicative of the...
Look, neither of us have a great memory. I'm just saying, if it's...
Yeah, wonder what the common factor is there.
I can't think of anything. For me... I have to prioritize.
Yes, and that's my entire point, is that I think your priorities are out of whack when you're watching preseason NBA
That was a special case, though. I'm not watching Celtics-Cavs preseason.
If you were like, the Giants are in the playoff drive or whatever, and I'm watching that, I'd be like, all right, fine. You know? That's not how I would choose to spend my Saturday, but... it's understandable.
Well, on Saturday.
Yeah. By the way, did I not tell you the Giants were going to make the playoffs?
Did I argue?
You did.
I said Giants were not going to make the playoffs.
On this very podcast, yes.
Find that audio. I don't remember saying that at
okay.
all.
Okay. All right, we'll go back. It was a couple weeks ago when we were talking about the Giants and their swoon.
I certainly never said they were going to fail to make the playoffs.
Pretty sure you did. Someone will have to.
Does not sound like me.
Someone will have to check us on that one. All right, should we jump into TV? Because we've been doing this for a while now. And there's a lot going on. Did you watch the premiere of Westworld?
I sure did.
I kind of knew that, but I figured I would ask as way of saying, like, I thought it was really good. And it was one of the, coming into this show, hearing a little bit about how they had some problems making it, they shut down production for a while, watching the trailer, which looked interesting. It had the potential to be an interesting mess. And I think it may still be that. But I thought for a pilot episode, it laid it out really well. And I think the best test of it for me is that it's a show that I am still thinking about and having conversations with people about and thinking about the philosophical implications of. So it sounds like you may not be on board to that extent.
Not to that extent. I'm not off board. I agree with a lot of what you said. It's very interesting. I mean, conceptually and philosophically, the idea of a Wild West theme park where people get to go live out Wild West fantasies. And the key here is almost any Wild West fantasy is morally horrifying.
Right.
That is very interesting to me. What they can do with the morality and what it means about society and human beings, all that stuff I'm into. I think that the whole conceit of these people living the same these androids, by the way, spoiler alert.
I don't think it's a spoiler to say they're androids. I think you find that out in like the first 5 minutes, right?
No, I'm just saying, I'm sure we're going to get into
Well, I'm sure we're going to spoil a lot if you haven't seen it yet.
Yeah. So this idea of the robots living the same day sort of over and over again, but having them be like, I get it. I'm in on it in terms of the concept and how it will make you think. In terms of the actual narrative show itself, I'm not all the way in because I did think it was a mess. That it doesn't mean the whole show is going to be a mess. But I think this was, and as someone reminded me shortly thereafter, it's very J.J. Abramsy. I don't know if it's a great sign that midway through the pilot, I'm already thinking to myself, well, none of this is going to get explained to me, and I'm going to be annoyed.
I didn't have that sense necessarily. And you're right. It's not perfect. And I think, it stumbles a lot in the scenes in which two humans are interacting, right?
Yeah.
Like it nails the robot scenes more.
They just dumped a lot of crap on the table.
Yeah.
and I'm not sure I'm totally confident that it's all meaningful or going anywhere or explainable. That being said, I'm going to watch it again. It was very interesting. I was engrossed, and like I said, I'm with you on there's a lot to talk about in terms of human beings and how they behave and the sort of things they would do.
Yeah. Well, I'm curious. Do you play Grand Theft Auto ever?
Not really. I have. I don't really play it per se. I play some video games that involve murder, though.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I feel like Grand Theft Auto is just a really apt sort of comparison because you really do feel like you're sort of visiting this world where certain things are permissible, you know? And, well, really anything is permissible in that world. And after you spend a little time in that world, right, that there is, you find yourself doing horrible things and really enjoying them, right? Like, I don't know, have you ever beaten up a hooker? Have you ever had sex with a hooker in Grand Theft Auto and then beaten her up and taking your money back?
I have not, no. But
there's something really weirdly satisfying about that, even though you know it's horribly, horribly wrong. So, you know, and never, obviously I wouldn't do that in real life, but it's like, there's something about living that out that is, it's hard to explain.
There's a game called Infamous that I've played where you sort of become, through an accident, you're like this electrified superhero sort of guy, and you can choose to go good or bad. And, you know, if you do bad things, you get like evil powers. If you do good things, you get like good powers, basically. And sometimes it's incredibly satisfying to just run around murdering civilians for no reason.
Yeah, and that's another Grand Theft Auto thing. It's like, you know, just running over pedestrians and getting points. You're like, this is great.
That's why I bring it up. It's like, yes, there is something satisfying, but I am pretty sure, like, that stuff, first of all, I'm probably already not as at ease with that stuff as some people are. And second of all, like, the fact that they're teeny video people on my screen is an important distinction for me.
Yeah, that does.
I don't think I'd be able to behave that way with humanoid robots. I really don't.
That is a fair point. And speaking of the humanoid robots,
to talk about.
I think that the performance by Evan Rachel Wood, and kind of, her ability to sort of jump between humanoid. And sort of sheer robot, you know what I mean? Like, in sort of the blink of an eye, it's powerful.
She's excellent. Jeffrey Wright is one of my favorite actors ever since I saw Basquiat back in the day. Did you ever see that movie?
I did not see Basquiat, but I've seen him be great in a lot of things. So
he's always great, but I highly recommend Basquiat.
All right.
It's just a great, bizarre, interesting movie about an artist that I really knew nothing about before seeing it. Ed Harris, man. Evil Ed Harris as like an evil cowboy guy. I'm in on that.
Yeah. Yeah, he's going to chew some scenery.
He is.
And
there's
really
a lot of scenery chewing. It's a very chewy show.
Yeah, there's a lot of chewing happening.
You know, Evan Rachel Wood is the exception to that, I think, because Anthony Hopkins certainly isn't holding back. I liked all that stuff. My worry is exclusively drawn from the sort of jumble of storylines and potential twists and stuff that all got dumped on the table in 1 hour of one episode. And I just feel like there's at least a decent chance that like stuff that seemed important won't even get mentioned.
Yeah.
Again.
Look, I'm not going to say that it won't go off the rails. Like it's definitely possible. But I thought it was an auspicious beginning. And I'm excited to see where it goes. And, you know, it did well ratings wise. So, HBO, you get some critical buzz and you get some ratings. Usually that equals a pretty quick renewal for season two. So I do feel like they may have some chance to draw out this story a little bit.
I totally agree with that. They'll have the chance and I hope that they will do it.
All right. So let's jump to a couple other pop culture things really quick. Should we talk about No Name?
Can we? Have you finally listened to it?
I have. Yes. I did my homework. weeks later. I'm curious, of all the records in all the world, why this one for you? Like, why did you want me to hear this one?
Because I think it strikes an interesting I think it finds an interesting home between like left field hip hop and sort of indie R&B, and I just think it's interesting. It's not the best album of the year, but it's made almost entirely by herself, and I just thought it was musically interesting. It has a ton of interesting textures throughout the whole album, and I just really liked it. It like hit my ear really well, so I was interested to see what you thought of it.
It's striking to me that you use the word interesting, because I would definitely say that about it. You know, it is a record that is doing interesting things. It did not hit my ear particularly well. Like, you know what I mean?
That might be the case.
I'm like, I appreciate what's happening here, and I like that she's trying things. You know, I thought the production and the beats were unique. You know what I mean? I'm like, all right, look at you. You're doing stuff. But
it never left
me feeling like, oh, my God, this is awesome. You know?
No, I wouldn't even say I felt that way. I really like it. It's a sort of style that I like. So in that respect, I think it's more my speed than yours. What you said about the beats, they sound like a certain sort of J Dilla and Madlib beat, where it's almost like the parts are falling down a waterfall together and just kind of hitting not quite exactly where you expect them to, but the beats kind of tumble into – it's like noises tumbling into a beat, if that makes sense, is the way it always sort of appears in my mind. And it creates this – sort of off-kilter shuffle to some of the songs, which I just find really interesting. But I won't lie. Part of the reason I wanted to have it as homework was to see I kind of thought you might find it, I don't know, difficult?
Yeah.
I don't know what the right word is.
I noticed that about the beats as well, and I just think that sort of thing for me in terms of what hits me in the gut as a music fan – I'm just less likely to be psyched about off-kilter beats. You know what I mean?
Okay. Yeah, no, I kind of thought that might be the case, but I wanted to see. I do think there is a certain... See, so to me, if you have like a programmed hi-hat, right?
And deep diving right now. Yes, programmed hi-hat, sorry.
Well, what I'm really saying is if for the entirety of your four-minute song, there's a hi-hat, which people who are saying, what the hell are you talking about? Just like the little cymbal hit that is the, not backbone, but like the clothes on your average drum beat. If that thing's programmed to hit every 16th note exactly throughout the whole course of the song, I can almost guarantee you I'm not interested in that music. And there's a big swath of musical territory between, you know, an exact programmed precise hi-hat for 4 minutes and what No Name or like Madlib is doing on a beat tape. But I like that someone, instead of just setting a computer to handle those things, and it goes beyond just me thinking like that's a cop-out as a human, it's more that I don't think it sounds good. I think things that are too precise musically don't sound good. And there's something to the idea of the human element in how music sounds to the listener. I really don't think you can. And I mean, that's the problem for me with a lot of current pop is like, the human element is something you hear and feel when you listen to music. And so for me, I don't know that No Name does it perfectly. I mean, I think there are people who do it better. Anderson .Paak, I think, is a better version in sort of the same genre as No Name. But I do think it stands out with her because it's all very simple. All the production's very simple, but it's very like left field, off kilter, just enough that you know she's actually doing something.
Yeah, and obviously we're talking about some aesthetic choices or preferences here. Yeah. But it's like, are you familiar with the Radiohead song "Reckoner"? Right. That's one of my favorite Radiohead songs, and I think my favorite part of that, and I would say almost most people's favorite part of that, is the drum part at the end of that song. He's working a cymbal, which is not, I don't think it's actually a hi-hat, I think it's a different kind of cymbal. And he's doing sort of these little sort of subtle things with it that are within the structure of the song that's there the whole time. But at the end, it's just a little bit extra, like, cymbal work. And it's kind of, like, it's almost hypnotic. And for me, that's the thing that I sort of enjoy, is that's a thing where you have a human doing something sort of innately human. But it's not like there's a big time signature change, right? It's all within sort of this structure of the song. It's a variation on it. And there's just such, like... It's such a beautiful, subtle thing. That's kind of my sweet spot. You know, for me, a lot of the beats in this were sort of, you know, taking the structure all over the road, and I sort of depart a little bit from some of that stuff.
Yeah, no, well, but that's sort of what I'm saying, is this album takes all that stuff to the extreme.
Yeah.
And that's why I'm not really surprised or like disappointed that you didn't think it was great. But I do think you hear what I'm talking about, right?
I do.
And I think that you bringing up Reckoner, that's a great example of part of the huge territory between a bad EDM song and No Name. But I do think that thing of bringing the human element to the parts of music that theoretically could be programmed. This is like when people talk about, oh, we don't want robot umpires because the human element's important. Those people are dumb, because the human element doesn't actually
benefit
do any good to the desired final product of baseball, which is getting the call right.
Huge tangent, but have you seen the Real Sports piece on the robot umpires?
Yeah, but let's let me finish my
sorry,
point.
It's really good. Okay, go ahead.
It is. Real sports is great. But in music, the end goal is not precision. The end goal is feeling. And you can't really get feeling the same way when you don't allow for the human element to play a factor. And so stuff like – because, look, Radiohead – and I love Radiohead. This is not a shot. But Radiohead's going to have a lot of stuff on their albums that's very precise and specific. And you know, what makes them Radiohead is that layered throughout and on top and in front of and behind that stuff is something that you feel is personal to the band, stuff that you feel is being conveyed from humans.
Right. Well, and I would argue that the precision – you know, the contrast of the precision with that personal makes the personal even more effective.
Totally agree. Yeah. Totally agree. But that's the point. And maybe No Name in this case goes too far personal and there's not enough precision to contrast it. Like, that's a criticism that seems valid to me. And also maybe it's just not your bag. But I thought, as an album that came out and got at least a little bit of buzz in 2016, it kind of serves as a referendum of feeling from music comes from humanity. And I think that's important.
I agree. And I think that's a good point to leave that on. So let's we probably should get going. And I know both of us have some... Go ahead.
Just do a quick pop in on Atlanta.
Yeah, all right. Let's really quick. Here's what I want to say about Atlanta. And I'm sure you'll have thoughts too, but this is the Black Justin Bieber episode, which I think is probably going to be one of the standouts when we look back.
I tend to agree, although did you watch yesterday's as well?
No, I have not seen yesterday's yet.
Oh, man, there's a lot to unpack there, too. But, okay, let's talk Black Justin Bieber quickly.
It's another instance to me where the show's gift for getting the music done so well really, like, helped the show. Like, this is a show that understood the world that it was dealing in. And obviously, like, there's this surreal thing of having this Justin Bieber who's identified as Justin Bieber, but not really Justin Bieber. But man, they gave him a great, like, pseudo Justin Bieber song. And I felt like it really put you right in that world. You know what I mean?
And that guy nailed it.
Yep.
And here's the other thing. The whole episode was about pretending to be something you're not, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's Paperboy trying to hit on the TV reporter and pretend he can play ball. And by the way, I have to believe that the tragedy of basketball was deliberate, because there's no way you could think that was a good game of basketball or that those guys know what they're doing. That had to be deliberately awful.
Do you think it was like a comment on rock and jock games in some way?
Maybe, or it was just part of the surreality of the episode.
It was really bad basketball.
It was terrible. I mean, it was a guy who was like, I can hoop in the hood, and then shot a two-handed layup like a 7-year-old girl.
I'm gonna suggest, though, that Paperboy couldn't ball, and this is a show that maybe didn't have the budget to, like, bring in a bunch of ballers to make it look good. I'm just saying that's possible.
I don't think so. I don't think it is possible. That's possible when you have the Mr. Robot basketball scene where no one's particularly good, but it's in the background and who cares.
Right.
That basketball game was front and center for at least 50% of that episode. And the whole plot hinged on him being good enough to at least compete with a black Justin Bieber who was not bad. Right. I have to believe the fact that everyone was a tragedy. I mean, Urkel was on there. That you can't convince me that was intended to look like a real basketball game that was being played well.
Urkel can ball a little bit. have you seen him in some of those games?
Yeah, but that's the point. Like, they had, and look, you can go find 10 guys that can play a little bit of hoop on the street and offer them $100. Like, that's not a budget constraint. I have to believe that was deliberate.
Yeah, you can certainly find those guys in Atlanta. That's a fair point.
Hold on one sec, because to me there's the whole theme of the episode is you're trying to be something you're not, and Paperboy's trying to hit on the TV reporter and play hoop. Donald Glover, Earn, is off pretending to be an agent and having a crazy and hilarious fake relationship with that lady who is always good in everything she's in.
Plus free drinks.
What'd you say?
Plus free drinks, man.
Plus free drinks. And then the end of the episode, slight spoiler alert, was the best part, because Paperboy walks back up to the reporter and is like, yo, listen, like, that really wasn't – I didn't put my best foot forward back there. I'm actually not a total psychopath. I really think – you know, look, I'm kind of blowing up here. I really think it'd be cool to get me on TV. And she says to him, stay in your lane. Be you. Don't try to do something that's not you. And then almost immediately after saying
that, she literally says the world wants you to be the asshole.
Exactly. And then immediately after that, begins to dance like a total lunatic to a Justin Bieber song that's being played at an apology press conference. Like, it's just the most – the show is so smart and well put together, and everything ties together. I mean, in most of these episodes, it has come together at the end like a friggin' Seinfeld.
Yeah.
Except it's not escapist comedy. It's deep, thoughtful narrative fiction. It's like...
With an ability to be absurd. With the ability to just make Justin Bieber black all of a sudden.
Yes.
You know?
And there's another sort of very, very bizarre and semi-absurd thing in this next episode that we can talk about next week, perhaps. It's just... I really think it's perfect.
Yeah. And Justin Bieber, by the way, this is the thing I was going to sort of ask you. I thought it was interesting that Justin Bieber, of all the people in the show, was the one who was the most real about who he was, right? You know, which is not what you would expect. It's a great show. It's going to be great every week. It's just now what I've come to expect.
It's so great. It's so great. I'm so, like, I don't even know how to describe my feelings about it. I'm so impressed and, like, I don't know Donald Glover, but somehow I'm proud of Donald Glover. Like, I just – it's so well done, man, and there's so little of this. And, oh, we never did – but homework for next week, two things. All right. Now I'm going to segue us into the end. two things I would like to say. Number one, I thought about this because it took you 7 years to listen to the No Name album, but I don't feel like we do enough movies and music. So I feel like we should maybe try to do like, every couple weeks a new album, every couple weeks a new movie, and sort of like assign each other
all right, I'm into that.
And music homework. So I unfortunately haven't thought about – we just did No Name, so maybe we like do a movie next. But we're going to have to figure that out next week because I haven't thought about it. Here's the other thing, though. You got to watch an episode or two of Luke Cage.
All right. I'll jump into this. I have superhero fatigue. We've discussed this often on the show.
No, but here's what I'm going to tell you that hopefully will help. It is the least superhero-y superhero thing I've ever seen.
Well,
far.
And here's the thing that I'm going to say that will probably surprise you. Of all the superhero things that are out there, one of the few things that I actually partook in was Jessica Jones. I watched Jessica Jones. So I'm not, I'm not super excited to jump back into that world, but I'll do it for you.
I'm only through 4 episodes, I think. But even compared to Jessica Jones, this is non-superhero-y, and it's much more interesting socially and philosophically.
All right. I have a bit of a Netflix queue that sort of worked up. I should say streaming queue. I haven't gotten to Narcos yet, season 2. I'm still working on BoJack Horseman. And Transparent is sitting out there. Transparent is amazing, and I haven't even started it yet. So I'm feeling a little behind, but I'll jump into
the show, or you haven't started this season?
This season.
Oh, I've never watched Transparent at all.
The show's tremendous.
I believe you. I'm telling you, you got to watch Luke Cage. You just have to.
Okay. All right. I also have a homework assignment. It's also a streaming television show, and it's also extremely near and dear to my heart. And I was thinking about this like as we're talking about Atlanta, and I think we love Atlanta roughly equally. And I want to stress that I feel as passionately about this show that I'm going to assign as I do Atlanta. I think it's brilliant. And it's a show called Black Mirror.
You're not the first person to give me this assignment.
Black Mirror is a sci-fi anthology series. I would say, modern day Twilight Zone is sort of a good comparison, right? In that, each episode is very standalone. They are generally focused around man's relationship to technology. And it has the same sort of tone and sensibility as the Twilight Zone, where you wouldn't call it horror necessarily, but it's a lot of sort of thoughtful allegories about the modern world. And at times goes to insane places. And I believe, if I'm not mistaken, I hope I have the order right, I believe the first episode is about a situation. I don't even give it away. You see the episode, it gets into it pretty quickly. But it's about a situation in modern politics that actually turned out to have a very real life parallel that came out after the show. And it's brilliant.
I know about that already.
Yeah.
That's probably the biggest reason I haven't watched it.
The show is great. I'm assigning it for a reason, which is that Netflix got such a charge out of airing the original 12 or 6 British episodes that they ordered like 12 more. And they're about to dump a season 3. That's the nice part of it. There's only 6 episodes. It's a tough show to binge a little bit because the episodes are really heavy and thoughtful. So you're not going to want to like pound through like 4 of them at once.
So there have only been 6 total so
far? But there's
far?
Only – it's only 6 hours. They did a 7th hour like a Christmas special, which is a thing they do over there in England, starring John Hamm that I would recommend tracking down, but I don't think is in the Netflix package. It's only 6 hours, so it's not too much to wrap your heads around, but it's great. And I'm thrilled that they're making more. I can't wait to see them. And my hope is that you'll love it as much as I do. And that, when season 3 drops, we can talk about it as we go. So,
okay. Black Mirror.
Black Mirror.
I can handle that. If you can,
that's a recommendation for everybody too. Not just for Kolsky. Definitely check out Black Mirror.
If you can watch Luke Cage, I can handle Black Mirror.
Okay.
That's fair. All right. Fair is fair.
Fair is fair. I'm going to bang some of these out this weekend, and that'll be my goal. Maybe I'll even skip a college football game.
I would recommend it, frankly. I can't tell you how much I've enjoyed skipping college football games if you have better television.
Oh, man. All right.
Look, you can have college football. I'll have Kevin Garnett. There's enough for everybody.
there's it's a great big world out there, and if you want to be That's on the right. side of the assholes, there's plenty of room to take the other side.
Let's slow down a little bit. I'm pretty sure college football is also the side of the assholes.
Yeah, I can't even argue with that. All right, man, have a great week. We went way longer than we were intended to, as usual, but I hope you guys have as much fun listening to this as we did talking about it. We'll see you next week.
Bye.
This game's in the Admiral refrigerator. The door is closed, the light's out, butter's getting hard, the eggs are cooling, and the Jell-O is jiggling.
So long, everybody,
and do me a favor, have yourself a tremendous evening.